Jay Lauren Norris with Lead the Narrative. Now, if you haven't been a part of this show before, you should probably listen up. And I'm a firm believer in the Bill of Rights, but I'm also a believer that it's not just mine. And what do I mean by that? I mean, you have as much right to speak as I do. You have as many opinions as I do. You have as many ideas as I do. And while I'm not an expert in politics, I'm not an expert in sciences, I'm not an expert in healthcare, I'm not an expert in anything except communication. That's what I've spent the majority of my life studying, leadership communication. And what I know is there are a whole lot of people who have opinions and ideas and thoughts and processes and ways that they're impacting the world. But because they don't have a megaphone, they don't have a camera, they don't have a podcast, they don't have a radio broadcast or a television network that's supporting them, their opinion goes unheard. Nobody knows who they are or what they do. Nobody cares what they think. If you're not voting, you don't matter. And even if you are voting, in many cases, you don't matter. But if you're not speaking your voice, if you're not telling the stories around you, then you're being led by the narrative and you're not leading it. You have a choice. Will you lead the narrative or will you be led by it? So what does it mean to lead the narrative? It means to understand that your voice, your story, your experiences, your relationships are as equally value to everybody around you as mine, as the loudmouth who does have a podcast, as the people who are protesting in the streets, the one with their signs in front of the White House, the one standing in the street corner and protesting everything they can think of to protest. Your voice matters just as much as theirs. This show is a platform for your voice. This is the place for you to come and say, I am making an impact in the world. Here's what I'm doing in my neighborhood. Here's what I'm doing in my city. Here's what I'm doing to help the people that I care about. Here's what I believe to be true. And I know that there are things that you and I will disagree on. Some of them maybe very strongly. There are also some things that we will agree on. And when we as a nation can find ourselves not fighting face to face against each other, but fighting back to back with each other, we can change the world. And I think that's what we need more of. Today I have in studio JR. JR is a simple kind of guy for the most part. I don't mean simple as in not so smart. I mean simple as in cut back to the basics. Let's get to the real grit of life and deal with it right there. And JR is here to talk to us about some of the things that he's done in this course of life, the stories of things that he's learned, and how he's taking those experiences and impacting the lives of others. JR, welcome. I appreciate you being here.
Thank you, man. Thanks for having me here today. We really appreciate it.
So tell me what it is that you're doing in this season of life to impact the world around you.
So back in 2017, my wife, myself, and my dad, who is a Vietnam veteran of the great United States Navy, we started the Veterans Ranch. And the premise of the Veterans Ranch is we do equine therapy. Now, what's equine therapy? Everybody thinks it's this big fancy thing, and it can be. We simply start by putting a grooming brush in your hand and get you to start building a bond of trust with an animal inherently born not to trust anyone. Long term, we're asking you, and we do this for veterans and their immediate household family, free of charge, by the way. Wow. So we're asking them to do some simple things. Make a connection, lay down heavy coats of burden you may still be hanging on to that you didn't even realize that you just kind of shoved down and put away, and start walking off as a new and improved version of yourself. Become a better husband, father, mother, daughter, whatever the case might be. Just become that new version of you.
How does the horse help with that? Is there a communication process, or is there a pathway or an education that you walk these veterans through while they're at the ranch in the therapy, or is it just being in the presence of a horse that brings that out?
Yeah, it's a little bit of everything that you just mentioned. Horses are very intuitive. I would dare to say the most intuitive animal on the planet today. And what I mean by that, and we didn't steal this line from Yellowstone, it's been around a long time. A horse can feel a gnat land on its back. Okay, to be scientific a little bit, a human's energy field is 5 to 7 feet. That's why most people can sneak up on you before you know they're there. A horse's is 15 to 30 feet. Okay, so they know everything about you 10 feet away. They're blood pumping mirrors. Okay, if you're anxious, nervous, any anxiety, mad, they're going to reflect that back to you or even not come anywhere near you, because horses are prey animals. Okay, out in the wild, their only defense mechanism is bite you or kick you. Now, that hurts like hell if you've ever had that happen to you. Not much of a defense mechanism out in the wild. So their fight or flight is flight 99% of the time, just to get away from the situation. So with the veterans, when we're introducing you to the horse, before we even put a grooming brush in your hand, we just ask you to stand there. Just be in their presence. Let them come to you. Stop thinking about thinking. Take any baggage, any garbage, your bad day, your argument you had with somebody on the phone on the way to us. Put it all aside, okay? Leave all that baggage at the door, because some of it or all of it or hopefully less of it will be there when you get back to pick it back up. And then we move on through a different process from there.
So I actually have a coaching client. Yes, it's been about 3 years ago. She was working on a speech, and in her presentation, she said, I want to talk about the fourth aspect of communication. As a public speaker, we kind of study the idea that there are three main aspects. There's body language, there's tonality, and there's the words you use. And she said, my experience in dealing with the horses is that they have another way of talking to you. And it goes back to what you talked about, that energy. Well, from the world of neuroscience and psychology, we know that we all have a vibe, and that vibe is a subconscious nature. It is the frequency at which we're operating, and that frequencies, when you translate those into words, those frequencies can impact a molecule of water to have a different pattern with negative words than with positive words, and we've seen that through various science experiences, speaking negative words to ice drops as they're freezing. The energy concept of the horse, though, I wonder, in your experience, have you seen the way she expressed it to me, and I'm formulating this idea as I'm saying it, the way she expressed it to me was that she was instructed by the equine therapist to go into the ring with a whip in her hand and smack it against her leg and tell the horse what to do, and that was supposed to initiate the horse's obedience. But she said, I just got more and more frustrated because every time I did that, the horse would run or rear up or try to get away from me. And she said, the more I got frustrated, the more the horse would run from me. And she said, I never did understand that. After we had about four coaching sessions talking through this, she came to the conclusion. She said, maybe what I was speaking to the horse was my frustration. Mm-hmm. Wasn't modeling my behavior, wasn't listening to the sound of my voice, wasn't paying attention to anything. It was just the frequency of my frustration that the horse was reading, and that's what the horse was responding to. Has that been your experience? Is that what you've observed as veterans who are dealing with PTSD or stress or whatever are coming into the ring?
Yeah, absolutely. Give you an example. We did something last year. A lot of what we do is groundwork. Everybody out there in the horse world will be going like this. You know, they'll be nodding their head. They'll understand what I'm talking about. Very rarely do we ever put a saddle on the horse. So we put them in a round pen. It's you, the horse, a round pen, and we use a training flag. Okay? It's a noisemaker. That horse doesn't know if it's a whip, a flag, or what. It just makes noise, and it doesn't like the noise. So we had this young man. We finally get him to the center of the arena, and we said, now just relax. And now just relax. Now, if I tell everybody out here in your listening audience to relax about a dozen times, what's going to happen? Your jaw gets a little tighter, you tense up, and that horse feels all of that. We literally got our tone down to just relax. And his jaw was so tight, he whispered, or so he thought, and he goes, I am relaxing. That horse pinned her ears back, and this was a beautiful white mare. For everybody old enough, looked like Silver from the Lone Ranger, okay? She bolts to the other side of the arena, because again, fight or flight. She doesn't know what's up with him. She just doesn't want to be a part of it. Now he's pissed. He wants to get out of the arena and everything's wrong. Oh, no. The Air Force didn't let you off that easy. You're not getting off that easy. Now, here's where I love veterans, okay? There were three veterans that said, hey, we'll give up our spot till after lunch because this guy needs to do something. We don't know what it is, but he's got to get through something. An hour and a half we kept him in the arena, okay? It's wow. Hot, okay? We were in Florida, okay? So it's hot, like July or August. And long story short, after an hour and a half, we had him going shoulder to shoulder around the round pen with this horse. We said, now stop, turn, go the other way. See if she follows you. She did. Okay? That's a bond of trust because you changed what you're doing. Okay? You changed your gait.
She's not doing this out of habit anymore.
Right. So it's like, oh, hang on. What now? She could have easily just stopped right where she was. She turned and she followed him. Now, we got him back to the center of the arena and, you know, just said, put your head down, kick a hip out. He had a ball cap on. I said, just keep it to where you can kind of see her, but she can't see your eyes. And he goes, well, what do I do now? I said, just shut down. Don't even think about thinking. Okay, just breathe. Just, she isn't even on the other side. And he goes, well, what am I waiting for? I said, wait for her to come to you. Well, all of a sudden, the horse starts licking her lips. See, horses, I'll back up a step. Horses learn in the release. Now, what does that mean? It's kind of like how I explained to him because he didn't understand it. I said, okay, you're in boot camp, day one. Four drill instructors yelling four different orders at you at the same time that you have to figure out how to obey using words your mama never used. Were you learning anything in that time or were you just reactionary? He said, just reactionary. I said, okay, and you learned and processed later when you could think about it, right? Yeah, that's what that horse is doing right now. So when she licks her lips, she likes what's going on. She likes that you're leaving her alone. She's learning. So I said, just sit there. Within 5 minutes, that horse turns around, walks up, puts her nose right in his chest. This young man melted like he was 2 years old. Watershed moment, tears. I mean, there were no dry eyes around the round pen. If there were, you had to check your heartbeat, okay? But you can't just run in there and go get him, you know, because you'll destroy what he did with that horse for an hour and a half. So we slowly get him out. Of course, I call him Dale Earnhardt hugs, okay? If you knew how Dale Earnhardt did it, he'd wrap his arm around your neck and say, get over here. You know, so there's a lot of that. And then we gave him time to, you know, go be by himself for a little bit. Well, to carry that forward, one thing we do later on at night is we do a campfire event. Okay, there's a lot of psychology to this. I don't know what the psychology is, but you will say things to people around a campfire you've never told people your whole life. There's just something about it. We give you a booklet earlier in the day where you need to write down not only names and numbers of friends that are there, because when you write with intention, it sticks in your memory better. You have to write down something you need to let go of. You don't know why. We don't even force you to do it. We just tell you the more you put into this, the more you're going to get out of it. So there were three of us. Me, this airman, and a Marine. Okay, I'm the only civilian, by the way. I'm a proud patriot. That's the 99% that support the 1% that wore the uniform. So it was time. We asked him, the airman first, to stand up. You rip that page out. You can share what's on it if you wish, and throw it in the fire. When the words burn, they're gone. You got to let it go. Now, we also know that that's the first step in a 1,000-mile journey, because if it was that easy, every single one of us every night would be out at a campfire throwing stuff in the fire, right? Yep. Okay. He shared what the moment was. He did 4 years in the Air Force, spent 9 months in the brig accused of sexual assault he knew he didn't do. So he's dealing with, my own government doesn't believe me, some guys in my unit didn't believe me. They eventually caught the young woman who was base jumping, getting young men in trouble, put her in prison, and let him out. He did the rest of his 4 years and got out, but he held on to all that angst for about 10 years. And he said, when you were doing this, I knew, he drove 4 hours to get to us. He said, I just knew that I had to get here and do this to start letting this go. And he threw the page in the fire. And again, more man hugs, more, you know, I ain't crying, you're crying, shut up, you know. But that made the Marine next to him share. You don't have to be a Ranger, SEAL Team 6, the tip of the spear to get PTS.
Right. Okay?
I dropped the D. It's not a disorder. The government calls it a disorder to qualify you for some benefits. Okay? It's an injury. It's something you've walked through in life that you now have to learn how to deal with it differently. There's not a single person on this planet that hasn't had some level of PTS, whether you were in war or not. Okay? So he shares that he spent his time in the Marine Corps in Honolulu. I'm like, oh, must have sucked to be you. You know? So he talks about how he flew in Ospreys. Now, Ospreys in the early days didn't always like to stay in the air, sadly. And on a training mission one day, he was not on this particular flight. Three of his buddies were. An Osprey went down. Nobody made it home. So he has to deal with the survivor's guilt. Why wasn't I number four? Why wasn't I on that plane? I lost three of my buddies. He celebrates their anniversary of their, they call it your extraction date. every single year. He still deals with it. I talked to him before I came out here, and he still deals with it every single day. But he shared, and he threw that in the fire. Those are powerful moments, because it's hard enough for veterans to share with other veterans, much less a civilian. Okay, because they don't think, and in a lot of cases, we don't understand what they've gone through. Again, cowboy boots, no combat boots. You know, I never had a drill instructor yell at me. That was my dad. Okay. My dad yelled at me too. But so when we take these veterans through this process, you're not healed, because I don't totally believe in that. I don't think veterans are broken. You're just improving on how you deal with things. You know, I had a veteran one time explain to me what his definition of laying down heavy coats of burden was. He said, when the demons come, and it's inherent that they're going to, I process that information differently, and I don't let it take me to the dark places it once did. You know, and I can reach back and help that next veteran where I may have been, or hope to God they don't get there, and help them get to a new place. Okay? Because right now, we hear somewhat about the veteran daily suicide rate. We've heard numbers all over the place. There's a little bit of a debate as to what the accurate number is. Bottom line is one is too many. Right now, the number's 44 a day. It's not 22. 44 a day. Through PTS, debt, stress, whatever the case might be, they're checking out. I mean, that's 16,000 great Americans a year checking out off this planet that don't need to.
Well, and the sad part of it is a lot of the things that are plaguing them, the survivor's guilt, the guilt of having done a job, the guilt of the job that they've done, that at the time they did it, they thought it was a righteous behavior, and now they're looking back on it going, what have I done? Mm-hmm. All of those things are also plaguing a lot of our teenagers today.
Yeah.
And some of them, not just teenagers, but middle school and earlier, because the leverage of the narrative of those who want to see America's demise come sooner, part of the narrative that they're telling us is that you're not worthwhile, whether it's by your skin color or your patriotism or your love for the country, or what are the newest one was the Christian nationalist idea that if you believe in God and you believe in country. I grew up that way. Faith, family, and freedom is what's on my coffee cup. I mean, I was always raised to, you know, God and country and families right up there with them. But the idea that those are all reprehensible notions these days, that narrative plays on its own. But it sounds to me like the narrative playing in the head of a lot of veterans isn't just that outside narrative. It's the internal narrative. It's the guilt. It's the shame. It's the remorse. It's the what did I do? What have I done? And it's holding on to that to such mm-hmm. a degree that it's not just impacting the dialogue that they say to themselves in the mirror, but it's impacting the dialogue they have with others and the internal dialogue that nobody hears.
It's absolutely the
case. And, you know, there's one more thing in there that is never talked about in media or anywhere outside of us and people in the veteran space, and that's the transition from military life to civilian life, what we call the real world. Okay, the real world to them for a minimum 4 years was a set schedule every day. Up at this time, PT, breakfast, whatever the next day was, lunch, okay? Everything of all that going on. And the military is getting better at helping them transition out. But I was told a couple of different things by different veterans. They say, look, you know, when you leave the military, sometimes it's kind of like breaking up with your girlfriend. You just don't talk to them anymore. You know, right. One guy told me, I said, what was your transition out like? He said, I got to wear my civvies, meaning your civilian clothes, for 2 weeks, and they said, see ya. That was his transition out. Now, you've gone from being told when to pee for the last 4 years to now you can go do whatever you want, whenever you want. Four of my buddies, okay, I graduated high school in 1991. I am that Gen Xer that had a Vietnam father, Vietnam era uncle, World War II grandfather. Yeah, you know, salute your veterans, respect your elders, patriotic as hell, you know, fight the good fight on the front of American front of keeping us free, okay? Well, when we graduated in 91, that's when the Gulf War was kicking off. And four of my buddies went in, three of them made it, one washed out of boot camp. But they went straight to the sandbox right out of high school. Now, I knew when the two came home, but the third one, I knew he got home, but I couldn't get a hold of him. Long before the days of texting, cell phone, right. pagers, you know, my dad's car phone cost him $4,000 and it was a buck a minute, right? So, so I'm driving now. I drive big trucks now, but I used to drive a lot of Mustangs. They never stayed stock very long. You could hear them coming before you saw them coming. I'm going through a neighborhood, low gear, so it's loud exhaust, and a St. Louis County cop, because I'm originally from the Midwest, whips around and pulls me over. And I'm like, I wasn't speeding. It's a little loud, but I wasn't speeding. And it's, sir, step out of the car, please. I'm like, okay, now what's really going on? All the nosy neighbors are coming out. And I step out of the car. It's my buddy Lenny Sanders that I played football with. And I'm like, you son of a, you know. So they're trying to figure out why I'm getting pulled out of the car to why I'm bear hugging a cop, you know, because he made it home. So I was just like, dude, we can go have a beer. You can go do whatever you want. And that's when he explained that to me. He goes, I don't know what that means. We'll go have that beer, but I don't know what it means. He said, why do you think I became a cop? He said, I didn't think getting out. I couldn't wait to get out. But then I missed the daily routine, the brotherhood and sisterhood of uniform, sense of serving. So I became a county cop, and he was a county cop for like 20 years.
Well, and it goes one step further than that, because I was an Air Force firefighter. I was in during Desert Storm, came out right after in 93. So that transition out for me was a little different too, because you have not just the brotherhood and the sisterhood, but you have the daily disciplines, you have the daily routine, but you also have this strange ability to expect a level of excellence and standards from people around you. And in the civilian world, that just doesn't exist. I've been a volunteer firefighter on and off since I got out of active duty. And the number of times that I, you know, have showed up at the station and another volunteer is like, well, I'm going to do it like this. And I'm like, that's a really bad idea. They're like, you can't tell me that. I'm like, well, yeah, but you're not getting me dead because you're an idiot.
Right.
I had a young guy that wanted to drive in the oncoming traffic. He's like, I've got my sirens on. I'm like, that big rig doesn't care.
Yeah.
He's got no place to go. He's going to hit you. Well, I've got my sirens on. When you're dead, you can argue about that with the judge. But passing this farm tractor on a two-lane road is not going to stop that semi who's already moving 70 miles an hour and needs 200 yards to stop.
Yeah.
But that sense of, I'll do it my way, that rebellion, that pushback, you don't get that in the military.
Yeah.
And if you do, they're disciplined, they're punished,
yeah.
And they learn their lesson really quick. It's not just a matter of let's fall in line, because the best ideas are still sought out and conversation still takes place and pushback and judgment is still necessary, but in the civilian world, that doesn't even have to come to the nature of common sense.
No, not at all. I mean,
yeah, you're right. You have the chain of command going up. You have the, you know what, rolls downhill on the way down, okay? But yeah, we do a lot of education in the civilian world, okay? Because I come at it, obviously, from that perspective, but I'm around veterans practically 24/7. If I'm on a Zoom call or something else on a particular day, I'll tell my wife, hey, if I'm a little saltier at 6 p.m. than I was at 6 a.m., I'm meeting with this group, and this group. She'll right. go, okay, I got it. Because we just let it fly. Say how you need
I'm
to say it.
Bathing in salt all day.
Yeah, it doesn't matter, okay? But the point that most civilian businesses that say they're veteran-friendly, they don't know what that means. They might be patriotic and support veterans, but then they go, oh, well, you're not qualified, or you're overqualified, underqualified. Well, I guarantee you, okay, I'll tell you, a good friend of mine, he has a veteran nonprofit in Paducah, Kentucky. They took a young, dumb 18-year-old kid that became a 26-year combat medic in the Army, saw the absolute worst humanity had to offer on about 8 or 9 different deployments, okay? Young, dumb kid, couldn't get a job as an EMT when he got out of service. Okay, same kind of deal. And so you have to understand that you're the veteran coming in, unless it's just an extremely technical, you really got to go to school job, could learn your job faster than 3/4 of the people you got working there. Hire them. Okay, at the ranch, all we hire, like right now, we travel around a lot, okay? We use a lot of network of people's horses and facilities and things like that. So we travel across Florida, Texas, doing what we do. We're actually on the manhunt right now for a piece of dirt in the greater DFW area, and we're going to relocate our headquarters to that area from Florida. But we are only going to hire veterans and their immediate household family. to work on the property. Why? Because it puts money back in there. Okay, you probably know this better than anybody. My dad laughs at what he got paid, you know, late 60s through the early 70s to even what our men and women get paid now. Probably better than 50% of our active duty service men and women are on food stamps. When you hear them in country music songs say they don't do this for the money, they're not kidding. You know, your average E4, okay, for everybody that doesn't understand basic buck private E1 to E9, your E4 makes $31,500 a year on average. I know McDonald's managers that make more. And unless they're in a bad neighborhood, they're not getting shot at.
Well, and Panda Express hires at 60 if you want to go manage a Panda Express. But if you want to see somebody in crisis, take a veteran who's expecting people to follow the instructions they're given and have some integrity and show up to work on time and et cetera, and put them in an environment where they're working with, if it's not, you know, a millennial, it's a robot.
Right.
You know, it's a touchscreen. I can't tell you how many times I've been to Taco Bell. There was one particular one we used to go to next to our house where we moved from. And I would go in there and do my little order on the screen and then turn around and go, can I just get a cup? And they would look at me like I had three heads. I'm like, well, the robot gave me a receipt, but the robot can't give me a cup. They're like, you'll get it with your meal. Can I not have a drink while I'm waiting? I've already paid for the cup, by the way.
Yeah.
And the person standing at the counter arguing with me would yell to the drive-through person to get a cup. And I'm like, aren't they right there? And so many times I would just wait until they walked away and walk around there and get my cup and, you know, dispense them to everybody. And they just look at me like, who do you think you are? I'm like, I'm a customer who just paid for this. How do you, as a veteran, as a leader, somebody who, like you said, I've stared death in the face with a fire hose in my hand. I've drugged bodies out of burning cars and pilots out of aircraft. And to then be told by a 20-year-old that I can't get a cup at Taco Bell, I'm like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Oh, and for what it's worth, on the pay scale of that, my disability benefit from the VA is $113 a month.
Yeah. Well, that's another big topic.
I can't take my wife to dinner on that these days.
No, that's another big topic.
Pay for diabetes medication.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we talked
about this, you know, before we, you know, went on air. You know, the VA is a great organization, but it's not what everybody thinks it is. You think, oh, there's VA, they get free health care and whatever else. Yeah, it might be free health care. Trump made it a lot better when he signed the executive order that you could go outside the VA to your own doctor and still get your benefits to pay for it. But you can't fix a 50-year problem with one stroke of a pen. Okay, they were denying me. I hear from vets all the time the phrase, deny till you die, here's another pill. Okay, they want to medicate you. They've turned my father-in-law into a legal drug addict. He served Army 55 to 57, peacetime, but he hurt his back when he was over in Germany. Okay, when he got back, oh, well, here's a pill for this, here's a pill for that. Every time he'd ask for something, here's a pill, here's a pill. Now you can't take him off of them. At 89 years old, they tried to take him off four of the medications. He either thought he was or he was literally in so much pain that they had to put him back on the other four. He'll be that way till the day, God bless him, they put him in the ground. But the VA made him that way. Now, I say that to say there are a lot of amazing people within the VA system. The one in Tampa, Florida, I mean, there's retired generals that go to that one. You know, there's better ones than others. But the one that started, brought all the attention to the VA was in Arizona. They were the ones putting files in drawers, hiding things so they could keep the bonus levels high. And they were like teachers. They had tenure. They couldn't be fired. Well, Trump changed that too. You know, love or hate the man, he took care of our veterans. So, you know, you got to realize it's not all peaches, roses, and fluffy bunnies for our veterans just because there's a VA. Quite honestly, our nonprofit or any nonprofit for veterans shouldn't have to exist. We shouldn't be giving free health care to illegals, okay, or people that are able to work. We shouldn't give them free health care. I don't care whether you served, you know, at home and you were never deployed or you were on 25 deployments. Free medical care, and I mean Cadillac health care, for you and your immediate household family till the day somebody dies. We all can figure it out. You know, for the most part, I treat things like the military does. Take 800 milligrams of ibuprofen, go on with the rest of my day.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there are so many things we got to tweak our thinking on about what we do with our veterans. I mean, right now, you know, we don't talk politics a whole lot, but right now we got hundreds of thousands of people sitting at the South Texas border just waiting to mad rush over there, and we're going to give them free health care.
And a right to vote.
And a right to vote, but we're going to deny our veterans. My dad's at 20%. OK, Okay, he was running Marines upriver out of Da Nang, running the dual 50 cals on the front of the PBRs. They got him 20% tinnitus. He's got 6% hearing in his right ear, about 65 in his left. They tell him the four detached retinas he had in both eyes, oh no, that's not service connected, because I guess the concussive force from dual 50s, you know, must kick like a 22, right? Because the carpal tunnel in both of his wrists, oh no, that's not service connected. And our veterans get tired of fighting the fight, and they want you to do that. I'm sorry, it's the government. It fires me up because the government doesn't want to pay. My dad said, son, we're expendable. They used us up for what they needed to use us for, and they want us, honestly, to die as fast as we can so they don't have to pay any more out for us till they get the next crop of boots coming into boot camp tomorrow.
But if you think about the union workers in the city or the auto workers or the SIEU, their union benefits, the AFL-CIO, has made sure that they will get their pensions until they die. Mm-hmm. And then those would be passed down. And it's not just a pension. It's not just a retirement fund. It is a better than livable wage for many of those people. And you have to wonder, where does that money come from? Well, it comes from the union dues, but it also comes from tax abatements and all kinds of other processes. And yet there's a union worker that probably retired after, you know, 50 years of pushing a pencil, who's doing a whole lot better than a battlefield general when it comes to the retirement and the medical benefits and everything else. I would agree, kind of like sports athletes making more than teachers. Little girls on OnlyFans making more money than surgeons.
Yeah.
My daughter's a nurse. They don't get paid nearly enough. They get paid pretty good, but not nearly enough compared to what everybody else is getting paid for. Significantly less value to society, in my opinion.
Oh, absolutely. My wife was in the medical field, okay? She was an optometric assistant. She was one that did all the pre-work on you before the doc come in, went, you know, good, bad, one or two, yes, you need glasses, okay? $12 an hour job. That's it, at her best. And she did it for 20 years and actually passed on accident, but passed the tougher certification than she wasn't even there for her that day. She thought she blew it. She thought she failed it. She actually passed the higher test because they accidentally gave them the wrong test, and she's making $12 an hour. You know, so again, fast food workers, all kinds of stuff. And now, hey, look, I worked for McDonald's for 8 years, okay? At one of the busiest ones in the country, and trained people that we sent all over the world at the store we were at. But, you know, it was more normal then. You know, it was the late 80s, early 90s. Yeah, I was making $8-9 an hour. I was making 40 grand a year, you know, as early 20-something. But, you know, we worked hard for it. We worked 40, 50, 60 hours a week because we were happy to have the job. That's what everybody listening to this right now needs to understand to bring it back to our veterans. Right now, to keep us free, because if you don't think there aren't cells, sleeper cells, right here in the United States, right now, could be some of them people working at that Panda Express. You don't know that with a simple signal, all of a sudden, our asses are grass and they're the lawnmower. It's those veterans guarding a post right now. You know, if you don't think they're not still all over the world, think again. Most of the 101st Airborne right now is sitting in Poland waiting to see if something kicks off in Ukraine. And they've been training the Ukrainians for 2 years before that. Okay, why do you think they know how to use the weapons we're bringing over there? Because we've been training them how to do it. There are still people that are just a step or two behind the front lines today. They're still seeing ugly crap around the world that are going to be veterans that are going to have to deal with this. But it's them keeping us free. So we can talk about right and left, left and right, right and wrong. You know, I mean, let's face it. Maybe we'd all be speaking German or Japanese if it wasn't for all the men that went overseas.
Well, at least we know that they'll speak politely with the proper pronouns to the Ukrainians and the Poles as they approach them. You
know. That's right. Because we got to give them that training.
Pronouns always stop bullets.
Yeah, we have to, you know, in the U.S. Navy, you know, who I love to death, you know, because I have a lot of family, a lot of friends that were in the Navy, you know, we have to have pronoun training, or, you know, we have to have something that kind of looks like a woman that has an Adam's apple bigger than me as the Navy's mascot now. You know, I mean, yeah, we need to get back to kicking ass and taking names, and that's okay to talk about that. You know, some of the best commercials ever, okay, are Marine Corps commercials. Marine Corps in the 80s made everybody want to join the Marine Corps, right? Because those commercials were awesome. The movie Full Metal Jacket, whether they knew it or not, was probably the best recruiting movie since Top Gun. you know, and now the new Top Gun is doing for the Navy what it did in the 80s. We got to get back to American patriotism, stick your chest out, say, damn right, I'm American, I'm proud of it. And it's okay to agree to disagree. I have friends of mine that I've known since the fourth grade that voted for Obama twice. I'd still fly to St. Louis right now and help him out if he was in trouble. You know, civil discourse used to be okay. We got to get back to that because it's in the veteran community too. Just because they serve, they're not all Trump supporting Republicans. I know some diehard liberals that were in the Army, you know, and will disagree with me on everything up one side and down the other. But they still served because you and everybody else that wore the uniform raised their right hand to defend the Constitution, our way of life, not a Republican or Democrat or independent party. Our way of life so we can be free to have those conversations. People need to remember that.
Well, I think that's a great note to end on. I want to remind all of you, I didn't know JR. Somebody else referred him to me. I had no idea who he was, what he believed, what he thought. I knew he was doing stuff with veterans and horses. That's a pretty good idea. That's a pretty good start. But the idea of Lead the Narrative is, whether we agree or don't, the conversation is worth having. Whether your opinion and mine are the same or not, that's not relevant. If you can set your feelings aside, focus on a logical conversation, bring your opinion to the table and articulate it, I want to hear what you have to say. I don't care if I like you or not. We might finish this and say, we are not going to go have a drink together. We are not going to be having dinner together. I don't want to see your horse. Or we might say, you know what? This is a friends for life kind of an opportunity. But my invitation to you is the same. If you're bold enough, if you're brash enough, go to leadthenarrative.com. There's a link right there. Just upload your YouTube video. Tell me what you think. Tell me what your opinion is. Remember, the Bill of Rights, it's not mine. I fought for it. I put on the uniform. I rushed into fires. I was ready to go to battle. But it's not mine. It's ours. And you have as much right. Now let me scratch that. Not as much right. You have as much obligation to voice your opinion, to speak your piece, to stand your ground as anybody else in the United States of America. And the longer we believe that, the longer we act on that, the more true it'll be. I'm J. Lauren Norris with Lead the Narrative for Tell It Like It Is TV. Have a blessed day.